From KALW News in San Francisco, this is a special edition of Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Soma.
I'm from Berkeley.
Concord, Cali.
Tenderloin District.
La Mission.
The Mission District.
Noe Valley.
I live in Silver Terrace.
Coming up, we'll follow up on our story about a young girl from East Oakland as she chases her dream.
I just told them the truth. I just told them I want to be a pharmacist because I saw it and I just really like what they do.
We'll also hear about a disorder that makes everyday sounds unbearable.
So the most common trigger sound is gum chewing. After that, we find breathing sounds, eating sounds.
Then we'll get inside the head of electric cellist Zoe Keating.
I'm jamming with myself. It's like me down here having a party with like 16 other cellos.
And we'll discover more hidden talents of the Cross Currents team, including mine, on this special hour-long edition of the Bay Area's Public Radio Magazine. If you visited your local library recently, you might have seen some kids listening to story time. You could see teenagers seated in front of computers, maybe adults reading on couches, somebody sleeping. Libraries aren't just for quiet reading anymore.
So if we are quiet, hush places and books only, we're not relevant to this community. I think we have to provide a safe place. We have to provide a place that people can come and hang out and exchange ideas and build develop a sense of community.
That's Senior Library Assistant Anthony Propernik. He works at the 81st Avenue Library in East Oakland and spoke with our community storytelling team here. We'll hear more from him shortly, but first, let's head over to San Francisco's Visitation Valley neighborhood. Here, our here producers met Dejon Simpson, a 13-year-old who loves his local library. He gives us a tour and shows us all the things you can do there.
We're here at Viz Valley Branch Library with here pop-up radio project at Visitation in Leland. Walk back in because it's cold outside. When you first walk in, it's two big palm trees. The floor looks nice as soon as you walk in. It's like bricks with different colors, so it looked nice. Today I was here actually early, so I had to wait at the door.
My name is Dejon Malik Simpson. I live in Sunnydale neighborhood. After Viz Valley, like, you keep going up the street and you'll reach Sunnydale. Sometimes it'd be fun, like at the top of the hill it's peaceful. At the bottom of the hill it's like shooting and things that's not that good. But then like when you get into Viz, it's not like that anymore. It's funner. It's like more peaceful. It's like the library's here. It's like always people you can talk to.
Hi, ladies.
This person that I'm about to go take us to, my auntie named Alice.
You know, I have bags. I can get you bags. So you don't have to ruin your purse.
This is the Viz Valley branch manager, Alice. Hi, Alice. Is your job here hard?
No, I get to work with wonderful kids like yourself. So definitely no.
And what do you think about my poem?
I love it. I think it's very creative.
Sometimes I get, like, good ideas. It's like a lot of stuff I do, like write songs. I could rap. I could crack jokes. And I could act. My grandma said I should be an actor when I get older.
Today, I came and got on the computer so I could read a book that they don't got here. Like, see, this is children's books.
I'm going to City of Arts and Tech. After I graduate, I want to go to Stanford University. When we was in fifth grade, we at the end of the year, they always used to take us to Stanford, and like I've been in one of their classes, and it's like the teacher actually said that I should come back and be in his class. His class was actually about nature or whatever. I asked the question and everybody started clapping because I was the only 10-year-old in that class. 10 or 11 then, only 10-year-old, and everybody was like, whoa. And then I ended up falling asleep in the end of the class.
And this is the movies. They're in alphabetical order. Lamps right here, so if you need to read and you need light for it. I'm leaving the library now and I'm going home to eat because I am hungry.
That was San Francisco resident Dejon Simpson taking us on a tour of the Visitation Valley Public Library. It's just down the street from KALW. But let's head back across the bay again to East Oakland and the 81st Avenue Library. This library is connected to two small elementary schools, so you can imagine how this place is abuzz with loud voices and tiny feet. Again, Senior Library Assistant Anthony Propernik.
I've been able to meet all these wonderful children, fifth graders, and I don't have children of my own, so it's a pleasure for me to be able to be part of a child's life and to meet kids and to hear sort of just experience how wonderful they can be, especially the fifth graders.
Propernik has been one of the people helping our Hear Here community storytelling team connect with residents all over Oakland and San Francisco.
And there's one in particular, Lita. Lita is in the middle, going into the fifth grade, and she, when I first met her, she asked me, she was looking for cookbooks.
Lita Hernandez and Anthony Propernik started a conversation about cooking. Turns out, he's really into food as well.
And I've learned so much from her. I've learned so much from sort of the inquiry, the just sort of navigating all these things for the first time that I've often taken for granted because I've experienced all these things in life. And so to have those conversations with Lita has been really special.
Our Hear Here producers met Lita Hernandez in July, recorded her story, and we broadcast it right here on Cross Currents in early August. Well, someone heard that story and gave us a call, which set off a series of events that may completely end up changing that young girl's life. So let's hear her story again, and then learn about the surprising events that came afterward.
My first favorite dream was being in a big castle of chocolate. My second favorite dream was eating a big cookie, and then I made more cookies, and then I ate those two until my stomach was full. My full name is Lita Hernandez, and I live in 80th Avenue in Oakland, California. One day when I was baking a bread, and my cousin came. My cousin, she said she wanted to be a chef. And I thought, well, if she wanted to be a chef, she's baking this, it's delicious, and what if I can make people happy too with my food? Making scrambled eggs. That was the most greatest day that I felt that I cooked, because I never thought I could have made eggs because like all the boil pops and all this stuff. But then I made it and I was very happy. Baking some pancakes. Three pancakes did not come out well. Only three, because then I got really frustrated, so I just stopped doing it. And I did four pancakes. One only came out. The other ones just, they looked like they were not good. I told my mom if I could get this cooking book. I look at it and I study what they have to do, what you have to have, and learn math, because math and being a chef has to do a lot of stuff with that. I really want to do it. I want to be a chef and a pharmacist. Well, maybe I could do part-time and then another part-time, but yeah, pretty much that.
First voice message.
This is Sharon Yeomans calling from UCSF School of Pharmacy, and I'm calling to give my response to the introducing Lita Hernandez story. She's the 10-year-old from Oakland who said that she was interested in being a chef and a pharmacist, and I'm a pharmacist and a chef, and I was just so thrilled to hear those words come out of her mouth. I almost fell out of my chair. And immediately I felt like I needed to contact the radio station to see if I could arrange a meeting with her.
Because it was so much like me. I mean, it was sort of, I was doing this at 10 years old, I was cooking.
My name is Sharon Lynn Yeomans, and I've been a pharmacist for 27 years. I cooked a dinner for my grandmother and my grandfather and my sisters when I was 10 years old, and I didn't think it was a big deal, and we're all sitting at the table getting ready to eat. My grandmother gets all teary and starts crying. Well, I can't believe she did something like this at 10 years old. So it just spoke to me that way. I said, oh, that's the child I should have had. That's my daughter, actually. That's how I felt. I want to meet this child. And I didn't know that it was going to happen. So I was shocked that I got a response back so quickly.
I heard that the university wanted to see me. I was so happy. And just, I told my mom, then when I got home, I told my brother, all my family, but I didn't really know what to expect.
And I thought, wow, this is really going to happen. We're actually going to get to meet her.
I woke up, it was already like 8. I was really nervous because my dad was coming, then my mom. I just ate some quick cereal and that was it. And I just, so nervous, so happy.
Finally, we met them outside. And
then we got to meet Sharon. She looked like she was nice. I can't really describe it, but yeah. We started talking.
We were very curious about her cooking. And we ended up giving her some cookbooks. And she said, oh, she says, I could use some new cookbooks.
Just asking me questions like, how does it feel and all other stuff? Like, well, why don't I want to be a pharmacist?
Everybody wanted to get in on it. I tell you, we could probably had this room filled. Everyone that heard about this story wanted to participate in some way. And it just worked out beautifully. We went and visited a lab.
They were studying a molecule that supposedly it can't stand the hotness, and it's when it's cold it could survive.
We took her across the street to the library. We have a brand new library.
It was like 3 feet tall and like 2 stories on the bottom, 3 stories on top. I was like, whoa. So that was pretty cool. I didn't really keep track of the time. I was just so excited. But it was fast.
I just hugged her and I told her we'd be in touch.
She said to keep on dreaming that I want to be a pharmacist and a cook.
Dreams are important. It's always important to have hope and dreams, because otherwise there's no reason for us to live. I, as a child growing up, I was always told that I can't do this or you can't do that or you're fantasizing about this. And I just decided not to listen to them, and I just forged ahead, and I figured if one thing didn't work out, something else would open up for me.
All right, so can you tell me what you had for breakfast?
I just had some milkshake.
You had a milkshake?
Yeah, I had a milkshake. It was like a strawberry milkshake.
Strawberry milkshake. So describe to me what you're wearing right now.
I'm wearing a badge that they gave me. It has a barcode, it has my picture, and then it says Future Chef and Pharmacist, and Lisa Hernandez, that's my name.
She's only 10 years old. We'll take baby steps. I still have a few surprises for her, but she doesn't know yet. But I was thinking, I said, we probably should figure out how to get some scholarship money for her, because I think that's what she's going to need when she goes to college. So
thank you for the story. And for both of us, probably our lives will never be the same. Thank you.
End of message.
Those were the voices of Lita Hernandez, Sharon Yeomans, and Hear Hear producer Erica Mu. She produced this piece, and KALW's Wendy Baker produced Dajon Simpson's story. Our Hear Hear community storytelling team wants to get to know you and the place that you live. What's your favorite spot in your neighborhood? Your kitchen? Your corner store? Or someplace completely different? Tell us all about it by visiting hearhear.kalw.org. That's HEARHERE at KALW.org. Just click on participate. Coming up, we'll hear an 8-year-old girl discuss her dyslexia with her mom in San Francisco StoryCorps booth.
And so, yeah, I got frustrated at first. I was like, there's the word. You just said it. Why can't you read it again?
A mother and daughter share their story. That's coming up after a very, very short break.
And you're listening to Cross Currents on KALW. I'm Audrey Dilling of the Cross Currents team and the Hear Hear team. And I am sitting here with KALW General Manager Matt Martin, celebrating the end of a successful fall membership campaign.
That's right, Audrey. I want to thank you and thank everyone who made this campaign such a success. Just after 4 o'clock, we reached our goal, which was $325,000. 3,200 listeners gave to the station over the last 2 weeks. 700 new members came on board at local public radio, which means that we have now more than 12,000 active members. You are the bedrock of this station. When we say 3/4 of our budget comes from you, we prefer to say that a lot, but you may not recognize that that's nearly double the average rate in public radio. We think That makes this station stronger, more responsive, more creative, and we hope more forward-looking. So thank you for that. And I have to say, this drive just feels so good. I feel like we've claimed a victory for listener-supported radio from right here in the Bay Area. The fact that we can keep evolving, finding better ways of doing things, that we can create new things, find new ways to create this kind of media in dialogue with the people who live in this community. So, and I hope you understand that, you know, when we've gone to other stations or told other people, hey, we're doing these no interruption campaigns, they say, well, that maybe worked once or twice. This is our fifth membership drive without interrupting the programming. And this time we went for the most ambitious goal that we have gone for in years. And the reason we did that was, number one, this station is doing more now in terms of creating original programming and reaching out to the community. And the story of Lita Hernandez and Sharon Humans we were just hearing really demonstrates what we're about and what we're making happening, small and large, and we're doing this together. And the second reason I feel like it's a real victory is that this station has a really proud tradition of doing just two membership campaigns a year. And the last couple of years, we've done three, largely because we decided we needed to build up the station's reserves that had run down. Well, now we are in much better shape, and because of the commitment that so many people around the Bay Area showed over this last 2 weeks, we do not need to have a membership drive in January. And that means that it's possible for us to have that kind of good way of doing things, very sustainable, two drives a year, without compromising the goals that I think we all share, which is that this station, as a public resource, can do more and will do more together. I'm thrilled, and I want to thank everybody who's been part of this effort. We're going to go forward together, and I'm really glad that you're with us.
Thank you, everybody, for showing how much you care about the station. Over the past couple of weeks, we've done some things to try to help you get to know KALW. Our sound engineer at KALW News, Seth Samuel, has been interviewing our staff and volunteers about all kinds of things, including their hidden talents. Let's listen to what he discovered about today's host, our executive editor, Ben Trefney.
Ben, where are you taking me?
Well, first, Seth, I'm going to take you from our conference table, and here on the conference table, I'm going to collect some things that are like, you know, detritus from the course of the day.
Wait, but we're on radio, so what are those things?
Well, there's a coffee mug. There's the coffee mug that's called Porn Star. That's your mug, I think, Seth.
You popped the P in Porn Star.
You can cut that if you want.
I won't.
And then there's this KALW mug here. It's the bell-bottom-shaped mug that people can get during membership drives by calling 800-525-9917. And so the point of this, though, Seth, is as we walk outside now between the KALW News Department and the station proper.
Let's walk faster.
Sometimes when I come into the newsroom, there's just these mugs and plates everywhere because they need to be cleaned up. And then I come up to the station door, and the station door is closed. And I'm like, how am I going to get in? Well, I figured it out, Seth, and this is my hidden talent. I can put my foot...
Tell me again, why can't you just use your hands like a normal human?
Because I've got so many dishes that everybody in the newsroom leaves in there because they're so busy. They're just too busy to actually clean their own dishes. So I come in, and my hands are full.
Why aren't you busy?
Well, I'm just telling them what to do.
Oh, look, it's Chris Hoff. Could you get the door for us, Chris?
Yes, I can, Seth.
Thank you.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
What is that, your hidden talent? You just can conjure Chris and, like,
please,
he shows up and...
enter, I am going to leave.
You can leave.
No, this is... Ben's hidden talent is opening the door with his feet or something.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Which is not...
Sorry to belittle it.
Well, it's... All right. It's a hidden skill, hidden ability. I mean, it's not a talent, I guess, maybe. So, like, it's just something that... It's a hidden thing I do.
Please demonstrate right
okay,
now.
So you could see or hear that my hands are full with all these dishes. And then I put my foot up into the handle. Like this. Yeah, my foot's in there. You can hear my foot stuck in the door. And then I could be like, and I catch it with my foot.
The door is open, ladies and gentlemen.
Foot.
Okay, bye, Ben.
Thank you.
You are listening to Cross Currents, a special edition here as we are wrapping up the fall membership campaign here at KALW. I'm Matt Martin, and I have to say, you know, we used to call KALW Information Radio. I feel like with these segments that the Cross Current team have put together for this membership drive, we've become too much Information Radio. But, you know, that having fun that has happened, you know, in this membership campaign. And I mean, I just think of Joe Burke being on the air with him yesterday and him consistently taking the very short breaks that we had during Morning Edition to tell Talk Like a Pirate jokes when we needed to be raising money. I love that. I'm glad that's part of this station. And, you know, I hope that it's something you appreciate as well. And I just want to put a quick thanks out. Folks may have heard that for the last couple of days of the drive, we counted down one song at a time towards our goal. And I just want to give a shout out to Ashley Ann Krigbaum, who did a great job curating and assembling that list of songs, not all of which we got to use because when it got hot and heavy, so much money was coming in this morning, we had to jump from like the 19 song to the 15 song to the 9 song. But thank you, Ashley Ann. And thanks to the listeners who sent in suggestions. Just this morning, Joe and I are in the studio and people are sending in emails with ideas of songs we should play. This is collaborating to make great radio right here in the Bay Area. So thanks for that.
That's the kind of collaboration that the conversation that we hear on Cross Currents all the time, listeners responding to us. We really appreciate it. And we really appreciate you showing your support the way that you did the last couple of weeks. We've reached our goal, but the lines are still open. You can call 525-9917 or go to kalw.org. And now let's get back to the multi-talented Ben Trefney.
All right, we're back to our one-hour edition of Cross Currents, and now it's time for your stories from San Francisco StoryCorps. Ida Cortez is 8 years old, and she's already had to overcome a tough challenge in her life. She has the developmental reading disorder, dyslexia. She and her mom, Kim Wargo, stepped into the StoryCorps booth at the Contemporary Jewish Museum to discuss how they're handling it.
When you were helping me read, did you ever for a moment think that I wouldn't be able to?
That's a really good question. You know, Ida, I'm an educator. That's what I do with my life, right?
Yeah.
And I taught at a school before you were born for kids with learning differences. So, and I taught a class at McGee for girls with learning differences. So I knew a lot about learning differences before you ever came along. But I have to admit that it was different being a parent and
watching your kids.
Yeah, definitely. And when you were having trouble at first, I didn't understand what was going on because I knew you were so smart because you could talk and, you know, people when you were 2 years old, they couldn't believe how you talked and the vocabulary that you used. And, you know, you were always like that. And so it was kind of weird because I was like, why is this kid not reading? And it didn't occur to me that, you know, there was something going on with your brain and with learning differences. And it was actually
I was really struggling.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I got frustrated at first. I was like, there's the word, you just said it. Why can't you read it again? You know? And then when we talked to your teachers and they kind of helped us see what was going on, then I really realized that, you know, now I understand. And then I knew how to help you, you know? And I never believed that you wouldn't learn how to read. What I didn't know, and I did worry about, was whether you would ever love to read, you know, because it was so hard.
Yeah.
And I really worried about that because I love to read so much and Dad loves to read and we wanted you to have that. And so I'm really happy that you were able to conquer that challenge and that now you have reading in your life as something that you love. What are some things that you wish people knew about dyslexia?
I wish people knew that it's not like an illness of the brain, it's a difference of the brain. And I also wish that people knew just how different people with dyslexia are. Not very. We're different in our own way, but come to think of it, I mean, every brain is a little bit different. Maybe ours are just a little bit more.
Those were the voices of 8-year-old Ida Cortez and her mom, Kim Wargo, sharing their story with San Francisco StoryCorps. That piece was produced by Eva Sanson. Find out how you can get involved with StoryCorps at kalw.org. Coming up, we're going to hear about another girl who's suffering from a different disorder, one that makes everyday sounds seem overwhelming.
Fingers, feet, pencil, etc. tapping. throat clearing, chewing, heavy breathing, backpack zipping.
What the world sounds like when you have misophonia. That's in a moment, after we hear from some of my multi-talented colleagues.
That's right. We're going to hear about more of Cross Current's multi-talented colleagues. But right now I have one of my multi-talented colleagues with me in the studio, Annette Bistrup, Director of Membership and Community Partnerships. She's in charge of this whole show here, and she has a couple of people to thank.
Yes, thank you very much, Audrey. It's indeed more than a couple. And thank you for that nice introduction. We would like to welcome the following new volunteers during this drive. We're so very grateful to these folks for showing their support by giving their time to make it a pleasure for listeners to call in with a donation. Camilla Brundes, Lucida Garcia, Marjorie, Barbara Havis, Diana Januta, Anne Barnett, Doris Nazari, Kathy Truin, Barbara Fetsoff, who came in all the way from Sonoma, Susan Boyle, Mike Vetsali, and André Glazé. I also would like to thank the following volunteers who have are longtime volunteers and who came in one or more times during this drive to answer phones and make it a pleasant experience again for listeners to call and give. These people are Tom Mason, Horace Marks, Carolyn Deasy, Michael McGinley, Marty Rausch, Bud Alderson, Bian Tan, Jody Ames, Marty Rausch, Laura Burnaby, Jack Major, Carl Bolden, Art Persico, Joshua Brody, Diana Lum, Joe Gray, Kiney Carney, John Navis, Ten Guggenheim, Jean Amos, Amit Pendil, John McDewitt, Charlie Wagerly, Robbie Brandwin, Jen Mahoney, Sheila Walsh, Linda Marine, Joy and Jim Esser, David Vartanoff, John Donahue, Karen Duderstadt, Ron Scotter, Tim Olson, Tom Hertzfeld, Stephen Brown, Elise Phillips, Ariel Litsky, Roger Donaldson, and Dan Gunning. And finally, I would like to thank the very many Cross Current staff and volunteers and intern journalists who came in daily to the phone room to answer the phones and talk to our listeners during the Cross Current show. So thank you to all you people for being so good to our listeners who called in to give during this drive.
And thank you so much, Annette, for all that you do. All of those names that you heard, it just represents how many people come in to support KALW. People just like the people who called to express their support by pledging online or calling in, which you can still do at kalw.org. But now it's time to hear about one of those volunteers that Annette mentioned, a member of our KALW news team. We're going to hear a secret talent from Leela Day, who's one of more than a dozen volunteers who actively are involved in our news department. Leela's not just good at making radio stories, which is what our man on the street, Seth Samuel, found out.
Tell me about your secret talent.
My secret talent would probably be that I can roll an Amish-style pretzel and bake it, and you would enjoy it, and you would think that I was from Gap, Pennsylvania, after you tasted it.
How many people know that you can do that?
Not too many people. It's a hidden talent.
Is that the kind of pretzel that's crunchy or the kind that is soft?
It's a soft pretzel.
But why is that still called a pretzel? Because isn't pretzel by definition that crunchy thing?
Actually, no. The pretzel is actually the soft thing, and it was changed into the crunchy thing through many years of transition of the pretzel. But the pretzel is actually made like a bagel, and so the original pretzel was actually very soft, but, you know, commercialization, everything, you know, changed it into something that's very hard. But no, I make a really mean, hot, soft pretzel.
So when are they going to come out with a crunchy bagel?
Don't they have crunchy bagel bites?
You know, you're absolutely right.
Thanks, Seth and Leela, for sharing that with us. And thanks to everybody for showing their support and showing that you want to keep voices like Seth and Leela's on the air. Thanks to you, we're able to train volunteers in audio production and deliver stories that really matter to you. You can still contribute at kalw.org or by calling 800-525-9917. We've got people there to answer your call. But for now, let's hear the next story, which comes from Leela Day. here on our evening news magazine, Cross Currents.
Welcome back. I'm Ben Trefney. We work with sound every day at KALW. Fun sounds. Frightening sounds. We're always listening to the world around us. So if we had an aversion to audio, it would be a problem. Some people do. It's a phenomenon called misophonia. It's a rare sensitivity to normal, everyday sounds, like typing, or footsteps, or even breathing. It's being increasingly diagnosed. Researchers believe misophonia begins in adolescence, but it can carry into adulthood. And it can cause the people who believe they are suffering from it to feel enraged, panicked, and inescapably overwhelmed. KALW's Leela Day spoke with a teenager who believes she's suffering from misophonia for this next story. The story of a family struggle with sound. And a note for our listeners, we're only using the girl's first name to protect her identity.
April 5th, 2012. Today in therapy, I had to close my eyes and try to remember the feeling that I get when I hear the sounds that bother me. Then try to picture myself in my safe place, my room. Then I open my eyes and I have to follow with my eyes a green ball that Mike would move back and forth in front of my eyes. Doing this helps me kind of move those feelings into a place of memory and not have it be so prevalent in my everyday life. My name is Diana, I'm 15 years old, and I live in San Jose, California. Misophonia, literally translated, is the hatred of sound, but I think they kind of named it wrong because it's really more decrease in tolerance for sounds. So for example, sneezing, sniffling, whistling, coughing, snoring. Fingers, feet, pencil, etc. tapping. Throat clearing, chewing, heavy breathing, backpack zipping, keyboard typing.
My daughter is 15, Diana. She always did really well in school, very responsible. Never had any problems. About 5 months ago, she told me that she has a problem and she needed help. That's when she came out and told me that she has problems with sound.
I used to play piano, but then I didn't really care for it too much, so I quit.
I talked to the doctor, and he didn't believe that it was a real condition. And he said that there's nothing wrong with her. And I asked if there's any specialist that he can refer us to, and he said, if you want to, you can go and have her ears checked out, but I don't think there's anything that's wrong with her. He totally dismissed it. The thing that got me thinking that this is not normal is when she said when she hears a sound, she wants to stab somebody or something. Normally, kids don't describe when they're angry that they want to stab something, especially from her. She's usually very quiet and very polite. But when I read her blog, that's when I realized it's the feeling that she had is really intense. It's not something that we can just talk over with her and it would go away.
April 4th, 2012. Recently, I've been feeling super dizzy and I've been having massive headaches from my anxiety and from the misophonia. So my mom has gotten me on this new diet. I'm supposed to eat all whole wheat grains and no sugar, and I have to start exercising a lot. Also, I've started taking my antidepressants. I do feel a lot better. It's only been 2 days, but I don't really know if it is from my new eating habits and my pills or if I'm just having a good week.
I was sitting in my room at my dad's house, and I was just on the computer, and my dad was sneezing, and he sneezed like 20 times in a row, and I kind of told myself on the 18th one, if he sneezes one more time, I'm gonna go downstairs and hit him. And he sneezed the 19th time, and I knew I couldn't do that, so I just kind of hit my head on the wall, and to kind of, I don't know, kind of get it out of my head or something. And then I felt really dizzy afterwards, so I just went to sleep.
I'm Dr. Marcia Johnson, audiologist, and I am in my clinic at the Oregon Tinnitus and Hyperacusis Treatment Clinic, and I specialize in very strange auditory disorders. Misophonia is something that I began working with in 1997, but we didn't have a name for it then. My very first patient came down from British Columbia. She was a teenage girl who suffered from severe reaction to just everyday noises, like just people sitting down to eat dinner, for example. She could not eat dinner with her family. She couldn't stand being in a classroom in high school with pencils scratching on the paper. What we call sounds that bother people with misophonia is trigger sounds. So the most common trigger sound is gum chewing. After that, we find breathing sounds, eating sounds, lip smacking sounds, throat clearing sounds, even people rubbing their feet together sounds. These kinds of trigger sounds can set off a tremendous amount of emotional distress for people that have misophonia. Try to imagine in your life, everywhere you go, there's somebody with a blackboard and a couple people with sharp fingernails, and they're scraping that blackboard, and you are feeling that way all the time. We believe it's some kind of a trigger that's associated with what we call the limbic system. This is your emotional center of your brain, and your autonomic nervous system, which is the part of your brain that controls your heart rate and your flight or fight capacities. Misophonia seems to be kind of a kissing cousin of maybe obsessive compulsive disorder. So some of the drugs that have been used for OCD are being tried on some of these patients, but so far I haven't met too many that have had success with that. So the sound therapy idea is that if we flood the brain with a broad band of sound, like a white noise, pink noise, broadband sound, if we flood the auditory system and brain with this kind of a sea of noise, that these little intrusive sounds are not going to be able to have as much of an impact. Then what we're finding after a year is about 80% of people that try this approach say they do get some relief.
For me, I like brown noise better. It just kind of sounds like static, and to some people it sounds like waves and stuff, but to me it sounds like static, and I don't know, it's kind of calming, and if I play it loud enough it drowns out people chewing.
I'm very careful when she's around. My husband also have a lot of sniffles. Even his breathing, she said she's bothered by his breathing, and he eats before we eat. And she would put on a brown noise just to drown all the sound out. Then she can sit and eat. So we try to accommodate her as much as we can. At times it's very hard that I'm trying my best, and when she's triggered, she's very mean. She would like grab my mouth and tell me to shut my mouth and don't chew with my mouth open, and she would snap at us, and it's very difficult, but I just tell myself that, you know, it's not her, it's the misophonia.
I'm hoping that I grow out of it, but then seeing on the internet and stuff, there's people who have this all the way to their 60s and 70s, and I'm kind of worried that it's going to happen to me, so kind of scared. Do you think that what I have is real, or do you think I'm just kind of making it up to get attention?
With you, I know it's a real condition that you have.
To find out more about misophonia, its symptoms, and possible treatments, go to kalw.org. Coming up, we'll get a very different perspective on sound from the woodsy studio of avant cellist Zoe Keating, where she uses software to turn her one instrument into an orchestra.
And I really love that part of it. Like, I love, like, adding up all the layers, and things get totally over the top. Like, it's just like, how many cellos can I possibly have?
The muses and music of a master cellist in just a few moments.
You're listening to a special edition of Cross Currents on KALW San Francisco, where we are celebrating the successful end of our fall membership campaign. And to thanking all the listeners and the people who made it possible, I'm Matt Martin here with Annette Bistrup, membership director here at KALW. And Annette, you've got some special thanks to give out.
I do indeed. We have some very special volunteers who really ramped it up this time and every time. First of all, Brenda Kett, who came in every day of the drive at 6 a.m. to open up the phone room for the day and kept a very good spirit in the phone room
Thank
all throughout
you, Brenda.
The morning.
Thank you, Brenda.
Tony Losica, who took on the Herculean task of data entry for all the pledges that came in by phone, which were numerous.
Yes.
And last but not least, as volunteers, Donna Hetherington, who worked tirelessly for several months before the drive to obtain food and beverage donations for our volunteers and to schedule the meals with incredible creativity and care.
Grazie, Bella.
And also thank you to Ashley Ann Krigbaum, who helped out with food pickups and logistical support in general for this drive. And finally, I would like to add my own personal thanks, I'm sure on behalf of all of us, to Emily Allgaier, who works so hard and with incredible grace every single day of the week, inside and outside the membership drives, to make the operations for membership at KALW run smoothly and efficiently. Thank you so much, Emily.
Thank you. And now let's go back to Cross Currents.
You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Ben Trefney. And now it's time for a segment where we talk with the most creative minds working in our favorite medium. This is the Audiophiles.
You hear that?
Can you hear me?
It's incredible.
Today, we want to take you into the trees. Into the redwood trees, to be exact, near Occidental, a town about an hour and a half north of San Francisco. That's where cellist Zoe Keating lives. Into the Trees is actually the name of her latest album, inspired by the forests around her home. Keating has been dubbed a one-woman orchestra because she uses a laptop and a series of pedals to turn this into this. Her unique style of music has gotten Keating to the top of the iTunes classical and electronic music charts, and all the while, she's remained an independent artist. In this piece from our archives, KALW's Martina Castro speaks with Keating at her home studio about how she experiments with the sound of her instrument. And you should know, all the music you'll hear was performed live during the interview, including the song you're hearing right now, performed by just one woman, her cello, and her laptop.
Zoe Keating is walking me around her house. We're looking for woodpeckers.
They're not doing it now, though. We call them tree penguins, which people laugh at. But
why penguins?
Because they look like penguins.
Her home is like a big tree house, halfway up a steep hill in a thick forest of redwood trees.
Sometimes they get really loud again in the evening. And they sound like they're like...
There are many sounds that surround Keating.
The blue jays.
The neighborhood dogs, and some less natural sounds.
Chainsaws.
That's amazing to me.
Chainsaws and wood chippers.
It's fitting to find Zoe Keating in the middle of this natural cacophony, because inside her studio, that's exactly what she creates when she sits down to compose.
Like, I'll spend 8 hours, you know, I'm just recording parts and I'm like in the groove and I'm just adding layers and layers and layers and layers and it gets bigger and bigger and then it goes in new directions and then I clean it up later. So it's almost like there's two parts to it. There's the kind of like getting it all down and then the cleanup. and the refining.
And the getting all down, that's an improvisational thing. Yeah. It's just you jamming with yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Totally. I'm jamming with myself. It's like me down here having a party with like 16 other cellos. and I really love that part of it. Like I love like adding up all the layers and things get totally over the top. Like it's just like, how many cellos can I possibly have?
When Keating says that, how many cellos, it's because of how she constructs her songs. She records a phrase, then loops it, then plays on top of it and records that. Again and again, creating layers upon layers of sound. That's why she's called a one-woman orchestra.
When I'm mixing down, I might actually have like 48 tracks, and but it's like a percussive sound might be created out of like 6 or 8 cellos that are all layered up to get a particular kind of tone.
Keating started playing the cello classically when she was 8, but she had paralyzing stage fright. In college, she discovered electronic music and started improvising soundtracks for her friends' films. She found that when she improvised, the stage fright would disappear. While recording for one of her friend's projects, she started really experimenting with the sounds that could come out of her instrument.
I was really interested in the things that were kind of not musical, little screeches and...
Can you give me an example?
Yeah, can I do it? Can you hear it if I do? Mm-hmm. Sort of just a Ponticello is a good one. You know, like when... Here's a regular cello sound. And then if you move the bow up a little bit... Hear how that's different?
Yes.
So there's a lot of potential in there.
Yeah.
And other things like you can tap with the bow in your fingers or you can shuffle.
Wow. That's literally you just put playing the bow on the side of the instrument.
I'm just playing the wood of the instrument.
The wood. Yeah.
In 1994, Keating moved to San Francisco and she started layering those various sounds as she composed. But she says there's a major difference between the music she creates in her studio and what you'd hear on stage when she performs those same compositions in front of an audience.
When I'm in the studio, I'm striving, like I'm trying to recreate this a feeling and something that's inside my head. I'm trying to recreate it perfectly. There's like something very, very concrete that I'm going for, and I'm struggling to make it. And it takes weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. I think that's true for writers, too. It's like you have an idea, and then you polish it, and you polish it, and you polish it, and you polish it. And it takes a long time for everything to finally click, and you know it's done. Whereas on stage, it's something that happens right there in that moment between me and the audience. It's like the culmination of what I'm feeling that day and the music that I've written. And it's different every time. Sometimes, like, I'll try to make it really, really, really perfect. Like, I was doing that, like, improvisatory process where I'm just recording. And then I'll go back and I'll say, like, okay, well, I'm going to record this one a little bit better. But that never works. It's always the first take with me because it might have some technical problems, but it's always going to have the right feeling. And so in some ways, maybe being on stage is the first take.
I mean, it's amazing that what you're able to do while your hands are on an instrument. I mean, you can't use your hands to do anything other than play. But then your feet, you're tapping on things. There's about, 10 pedals that you've got. And then and you're thinking how many beats ahead of what's happening.
I'm not really thinking in beats, really. I'm thinking in musical shapes and phrases. So I'm thinking about the overall shape of a piece. And I'm thinking of it phrase by phrase.
So what's actually happening when you're pressing the pedals?
I'm running 3 different programs on the computer, and the computer is controlled with MIDI messages. So these MIDI messages, they tell the computer what to do. It's basically like your hands. So, you know, record now, stop recording, record on this track, stop recording, fade this down, fade this up, pan, things like that. All the things you might do if you were a DJ. And the messages are pre-programmed in some cases. It's almost like a score, like a musical score, but it's a MIDI score.
But these are parts that you are recording live.
Yeah.
You just have maybe told the program, okay, store these, I'll come back to you.
Yeah, it's like a mixture of sampling and live looping. So one program samples things, so it like records the cello and then stores it for later. And then other times I'm like recording and I'm recording on top of it where you can hear sort of like a delay kind of thing. And I just combine those to try to make it interesting.
So do you ever improvise on stage and live performances?
I try to do it every performance, actually.
Would you mind improvising something for us? And then maybe afterwards I might ask you what made you go in that direction.
You know, it's so abstract, I don't even know how I could possibly describe it. It's more like shapes and colors. It's a completely non-verbal, non-direct thought kind of experience where it's almost like I'm painting. Like when I make some sort of atmosphere or pattern in my mind, then I have to balance it out by something low on the bottom, and then I have to add little things on the sides, and it's sort of maybe I'm an abstract expressionist. I think that my goal is to have the audience experience it like I do. I don't know what that means, but I'm always trying to go there and trying to figure it out.
That was cellist Zoe Keating speaking with KALW's Martina Castro. You can catch Zoe Keating performing live on September 30th at Fisher Ranch in Marin with ODC Dance. For more information, go to our website, kalw.org. That's also where you can hear the extended version of this interview with the full recordings of the song Zoe Keating performed for us. And now I'm going to hand it back to our colleagues to close the show.
I'm Matt Martin, and this is going to wrap up a special edition of Cross Currents as we are ending successfully our fall membership campaign here at Local Public Radio. I want to thank a few folks in the front office, operations manager Bill Helgeson, who keeps the wheels turning even when I go into what might euphemistically be called pledge drive mode, our development team, David LaTulipe, Emily Allgaier, and Annette Bistrup. Annette, especially, somebody who's willing to think big while always recognizing that this work is about building one relationship at a time, and she never loses sight of that. I also want to give some special recognition to our on-air announcing staff. These drives are a time when they are asked to do more, and I have to say it is often a grind, but they were just remarkable during this campaign. Debbie Kennedy, Eric Wayne, Eric Jansen, Kevin Vance, David LaTulipe, Bob Summer, thanks to you all. And of course, our mainstays, Joe Burke, so much heavy lifting and great humor in the morning. Thank you so much, Joe. Joanne Marr, who's at the controls right now, brought so much energy and enthusiasm every time she was coming on the air. It just made a huge difference. And I want to send out a special thanks to the one member of our announcing crew who was not able to be with us during this campaign, and that is Alan Farley. Alan, we love you. You're listening to KLW San Francisco. I'm Matt Martin, and before we go back to fresh air, I just want to say this was the song that I had planned for us to play when we hit our goal for this membership campaign. We forgot. And so I just want to say we've got something great here at KALW. This community has it for 71 years. We've built it together. And I want to thank you for being part of it. And we're going to move forward. And thanks a lot for listening and supporting KALW San Francisco.